I want you to try a little experiment with me. Right now, go ahead and unlock your phone, open your brokerage app, and look at your portfolio.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, scroll past the big stuff, the index funds, the tech giants you've held for years. Go way down to the bottom, the dregs.
Everyone has them.
Everyone does. That one random mining stock your cousin mentioned at Thanksgiving, or that biotech company that was, supposed to cure the common cold but is now down 60%.
Or 10 of them.
You look at it, you sigh, maybe you check the news for some kind of miracle, and then you close the app. Now, here's the real question. How expensive was that sigh?
And just to be clear, we're not asking how much money you lost on the stock. We're asking how much did it cost you to think about it?
See, that sounds like a trick question. We're conditioned to believe that thoughts are free. They're
Look.
just floating around. I can think about pizza, I can think about the Roman Empire, I can think about my stocks. It doesn't cost a dime.
That is the common assumption. But today, we're doing a deep dive into a piece that argues, pretty aggressively and with math, that your attention is actually the most expensive asset you own.
And if you're spending it on those little scraps at the bottom of the portfolio,
You're not just wasting time. You're engaging in what the author calls a structural deficiency that almost guarantees you will be a poorer investor.
structural deficiency. I like that. It sounds like something a bridge inspector would say right before condemning a highway.
Well, in this case, the highway is your brain. We are looking at an article called The Attention Cost by Jocelyn Dubey. It's from his Infinite Investor series.
Right.
And this isn't some self-help piece about, mindfulness. This is cold, hard portfolio arithmetic.
Dubey's core argument is that we fixate on all the wrong costs. We'll freak out over a 0.5% expense ratio on an ETF, or agonize over a $10 trade commission.
But we treat the cost of maintaining a position in our own heads as if it's zero.
Which is a fatal error.
It is. And to really get why, we have to start with a concept he leans on pretty heavily. The difference between ergodic and non-ergodic systems.
Okay, hold on. Non-ergodic? That sounds like we're about to do physics here. Let's unpack that before we go any further.
It sounds super complex, but the idea is actually, it's pretty intuitive in this context. Money is mostly ergodic,
Hi.
meaning if you lose $1,000 in the market, the system allows you to make it back. You can work harder, you can save more, you can get a lucky trade. The state of having money is recoverable.
Right. I can go bust and then bounce back.
Exactly. But time, attention, those are strictly non-ergodic. Once you spend an hour researching a dead-end stock, that hour is gone.
Gone forever.
It has evaporated from the universe. You cannot earn it back. It is a permanent loss of a totally finite resource.
So if I'm allocating that unrecoverable resource, my time, my attention, to something that has no real payout, I'm not just losing the game, I'm losing the pieces from the board itself.
That's it. And Dubey uses this brilliant analogy to really hammer this home. He compares the investor to a high-powered trial lawyer.
I loved this part. Okay, so picture a lawyer who bills out at a really serious rate. They've got this massive case on their desk worth maybe $2 million. It's complex, it's high stakes.
It requires hundreds of hours of deep focus.
Yeah.
The math is obvious. You do the work.
Of
But
course.
then another file lands on the desk. It's a dispute over a fence line. It's worth, I don't know, $15,000, but it's messy. The neighbors are screaming at each other. There are emails. It's going to take 50 hours of work.
A good lawyer looks at that and just says, no way. Not because they're lazy, but because the return on their attention is negative.
The attention required exceeds the value available. It's a bad trade.
But here's the pushback, and I think this is where people listening might get stuck. Investors aren't dealing hourly, right? If I'm on my couch on a Sunday checking quotes, I'm not on the clock. It feels like a hobby. So why shouldn't I take that tiny, messy case? Why shouldn't I hold that messy stock?
That is the trap. That is exactly where this structural deficiency hides. You think it's free because nobody's writing you a check for your time. But Dubey's point is, if you manage a portfolio, you absolutely have an internal billable rate.
And when you ignore it, you destroy value. Okay, let's prove it. Let's get into the arithmetic of attention, because he actually runs the numbers, and honestly, it's a little embarrassing.
It is bracing. He sets up this scenario with a hypothetical investor. Let's call him Bob. Bob's doing well. He's got a million-dollar
Do it for
portfolio,
Bob.
and Bob is prudent. He knows about risk management. So when he buys some speculative biotech, he keeps the position small. He makes it a 0.2% position.
Okay, so math. That's $2,000. That's tiny. That's play money. If it goes to zero, Bob's life doesn't change.
It feels negligible, but watch what happens. The stock is volatile because these small speculative stocks always are. It spikes on a rumor, it drops on a delay. Bob notices.
Of course he notices. We're wired for it. Red flashing lights, green flashing lights, it triggers the lizard brain.
So Bob opens his app. He reads the press release. He jumps on Twitter, sorry, X, to see what the community is saying.
Uh-huh.
He checks the chart. He spends, let's say, 30 minutes on this.
Which feels like nothing. 30 minutes is a sitcom episode.
But apply the lawyer's math. If Bob's time as a capital allocator is valuable, let's be conservative and say it's worth $300 an hour.
Okay, $300 an hour.
That 30-minute quick check just cost him $150 in billable mental energy.
And the position is only worth $2,000.
Exactly. He just spent 7.5% of the position's entire principal value in one sitting, just thinking about it.
That is horrifying.
And it doesn't just happen once, right? Over a year between earnings, FDA trials, panic selling Bob, might spend 4 to 6 hours worrying about this $2,000 stock.
So at $300 an hour, that's what, $1,200 to $1,800 a year?
Now compare that to the potential return. Let's say this biotech is actually a decent bet. Mathematically, maybe the expected return, the average profit he's likely to make, is about $140.
Wait, hold on. The expected profit is $140, but the cost of the brain damage to monitor it is over $1,000.
You are paying roughly 10 times the expected value of the position just to keep it in your head. Dubé calls this an attention negative allocation.
You are subsidizing a financial asset with your own cognitive decline.
It's like hiring a world-class security team to guard a ham sandwich.
The cost of the guard is higher than the value of the asset. That's a perfect analogy. And the tragedy is Bob thinks he's being responsible because the position size is small.
Right. He's thinking, I'm only risking 0.2%. But he's actually risking maybe 5 or 10% of his total annual attention span.
But I'm going to play devil's advocate again, because I know what people are thinking. They're thinking, okay, sure, the math is cute, but my brain isn't a battery. I don't run out of charge. I can check the biotech stock and still manage my real money. I can multitask.
Can you, though? This is where the article pivots from simple math to something much, much deeper. This is the concept of displacement value.
This was the part that actually made me put the article down and just stare at the wall for a minute.
Displacement value is the hidden cost, the $300 hourly rate.
Yeah.
That's the visible part. Displacement value asks, what specific high-value decision did you not make because you were distracted by the low-value noise?
The opportunity cost of the road not taken.
And Dubé argues attention is totally zero-sum. If your mental RAM is clogged up with 20 tiny, noisy positions, you literally do not have the bandwidth to process the big, boring, important stuff.
So let's talk about that big, boring stuff. Dubé gives examples of decisions Bob should have been making while he was chasing biotech rumors. He talks about the index decision and the compounder.
Right. Let's take the compounder. In our world, a compounder is that high-quality winning stock you've owned for a while. Wide moat, great management, it just keeps winning. Let's say Bob has one. And it's 5% of his portfolio.
Okay. A solid $50,000 position.
Bob should be spending those 30 minutes analyzing whether he should double down. Should he take that 5% position and make it 8%? That's a $30,000 capital deployment decision.
And if he gets that right, and the stock keeps compounding at 20%.
That one decision, that one moment of pure focus, is worth $6,000 a year in excess return. Compare that to the biotech stock, where the maximum upside of his attention is, what, $50?
$100.
So why do we do it? If the math is so obvious, why do we stare at the penny stock instead of analyzing our winner?
Dopamine. This is the psychological component. The small, volatile stock is a slot machine. It offers intermittent reinforcement. It's exciting. Analyzing a stalwart, a boring safe company, or adding to an S&P 500 fund, that's work.
It's heavy lifting. It means reading 10Ks, thinking about macro 10-year timelines. It's cognitively expensive.
And so we choose the cognitive candy. We check the 0.2% position because it's easy and stimulating, even though it's worthless. We avoid the compounder decision because it's hard, even though it's worth thousands.
He puts a number on this ratio, doesn't he? He does. He estimates the displacement ratio is about 100 to 1. The tiny stock impacts your wealth by tens of dollars. The decision it displaces impacts your wealth by thousands.
You are trading a dollar of value for a penny of entertainment. That's brutal. It really reframes the whole it's just a hobby argument.
It's not a hobby. It's a leak. A hole in the bottom of your boat. And it's insidious because it's not one big decision. It's just a glance, a notification, a quick check.
But those glances fragment your mind.
Think about a computer. If you have 50 tabs open in your browser, the whole machine just slows down. It doesn't crash, but it lags. You can't run the heavy-duty software, the deep thinking, because the RAM is eaten up by the 50 tabs of garbage.
Dubey has this quote, "The cost of a small position is not measured by its losses. It is measured by the quality of the decisions it displaces."
That's the core of it. If you hold a stock that's too small to matter, you are voluntarily lowering your IQ for the decisions that do matter.
So we need to close the tabs, reclaim the RAM. Dubey proposes a rule for this, the attention threshold.
Yes, and he's quite strict about it. He argues the minimum position size is the weight below which the cost of monitoring exceeds its expected contribution.
Which implies there's a hard floor. You shouldn't hold anything below a certain percent.
For an active stock picker, someone doing the work, Dubey suggests 1% is the absolute floor.
1%? That's going to sound high to people who like to sprinkle money around.
But look at the math again. A 0.2% position has to quintuple go up 500% just to add 0.8% to your portfolio.
And 0.8% is just. That's a generic Tuesday in the market. You wouldn't even notice it.
Exactly. You can't distinguish its success from random noise, so why are you holding it? Belief without weight is not investment. It is spectatorship.
Oof. Spectatorship. That stings. You're just buying a ticket to watch the game, not actually playing it.
If you really believe in an idea, size it up until it actually matters. And if you can't justify making it 2%, 3%, 5%, then get rid of it.
But what do I do with the money? If I sell all these little fun positions, I can't just find a dozen great ideas instantly.
And this leads to the surprising hero of the whole article. Cash.
Cash. The most hated asset in a bull market. Cash is trash, right? It's losing to inflation. It's lazy.
Dubey flips that completely. He argues that under the attention cost model, cash is a superstar. And why? Because it is a zero attention cost asset.
It demands nothing from you. You don't have to read an earnings report for a dollar bill.
Zero analysis, zero anxiety, zero thesis maintenance. If your alternative is a 0.3% distraction eating your focus, cash is mathematically the superior position. Not because of its yield, but because it protects your cognitive bandwidth.
It's like clearing off your desk. An empty desk doesn't do anything, but it creates the space for you to eventually do great work.
Exactly. Or think of it like a lion.
A lion. Okay.
A lion spends 20 hours a day doing absolutely nothing. Just sleeping. It looks lazy. It is not lazy. It's conserving energy. It's not chasing mice.
The 0.2% stocks are the mice.
Right. If the lion spent all day chasing mice, it would starve. The energy to catch the mouse is more than the calories the mouse provides. It's a negative return activity.
A structural deficiency.
There you go. So the lion waits. It holds cash, its energy. And because it isn't exhausted from chasing mice when the gazelle shows up, the big fat compounder opportunity, the lion has 100% of its tower to strike.
I love that. So holding cash isn't passive. It's being a predator waiting for the right kill.
Which brings us to the cognitive 100 bagger.
Okay, let's land the plane on this. The cognitive 100 bagger. We know a financial 100 bagger is a stock that goes up 100 times. How does a thought go up 100 times?
It's about compounding decision quality. Just like your capital compounds, your judgment compounds over time.
Walk me through that.
If you start wasting your time on the mice, the tiny positions, you reclaim all that attention. You use that attention to make one better decision on a major position. Maybe you buy Amazon in 2010. Maybe you just hold tight during a crash instead of panic selling.
Right. That one decision can change the entire trajectory of your wealth.
That decision creates more capital, but it also creates a calmer mind. And a calmer mind makes better decisions next year and the year after that. It's a recursive loop. Better attention leads to better decisions, which simplifies your portfolio, which gives you even more attention.
It's the flywheel effect.
And Dubey references Hendrik Bethenbinder here, the academic who proved that only about 4% of stocks generate all the net wealth in the stock market.
The 4% rule. Most stocks are duds, and a few superstars carry the entire market.
Dubey's argument is that the same thing applies to your brain. A tiny fraction of your decisions, maybe 4% of the thoughts you have in your investing lifetime, will generate all of your returns.
The decision to buy the house, to max out the 401k, the decision to average up on that compounder.
Those are the 4% moments. Everything else is just noise. And if you're exhausted from tracking 20 meaningless penny stocks, you will be too tired or too distracted to spot that 4% signal when it finally flashes.
That is profound. We're so worried about missing the next big thing that by chasing everything, we ensure we actually miss it.
We drown the signal in our own self-generated static.
So the goal isn't just to save time. It's to curate a mind that is capable of recognizing greatness when it appears.
That's it. As the article concludes, capital compounds in the portfolio, attention compounds in the investor. Protect both.
Attention compounds in the investor. I'm going to need to sit with that one for a while. It really changes the whole definition of what it means to be an active investor.
It really does. Being active doesn't mean clicking buttons or trading all the time. It means being actively ruthless about what you allow into your head.
So we have a challenge for you today. And this one might be a little painful.
It might be.
I want you to go back to that portfolio we talked about at the beginning, or your watch list, or even your calendar.
And look for the mice. Look for those 0.2% positions.
Identify the things that are taking up RAM in your brain, but have no mathematical path to actually changing your life.
And then ask the hard question. Are these options? Are these fun little bets? Or are they structural deficiencies?
Are they attention negative allocations?
If the monitoring cost exceeds the value, you have to cut them. Be the lion. Stop chasing mice. Your attention is the only asset you can't buy more of.
A huge thank you to Jocelyn Dubay for this absolute wake-up call of a deep dive.
It certainly woke me up. I think I have some selling to do.
Don't we all? And thank you, the listener, for investing your finite, non-ergodic attention with us. We know exactly how expensive it is.
And we'll make sure the next one is worth the billable hours, too.
We'll see you on the next deep dive.